Alabama and Tennessee syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to Thursday, which we like to call Friday Eve around here. You are almost to the weekend. We're going to get you all the way there. In the meantime, we got a great show laid on for you. And for those of y'all that have been with us all day long as we streamed live on the Cash Patel confirmation hearings, hang around, man. It's going to be a great show. And JP is over there on the board. Hey, man, how you doing?
I'm doing good. It's been crazy today.
It's been crazy.
It's been awesome.
It's been like a good kind of crazy.
Yeah, yes.
It's the kind of crazy you look for.
I know.
It's kind of crazy we get up in the morning for around here. Well, listen, we do have a great show laid on for you. So coming up at 3 p.m., a guy that I've had the pleasure of getting to know a little bit, Mark McEthrin, is going to be with us from Huntsville. He's a former Blackhawk helicopter crew chief. Spent time maybe a decade or so in the Army, and he's got some perspectives on the crash that occurred in D.C. that went viral this morning on social media. In fact, I believe he's going to be on News Nation tonight, but I asked first, and so he's going to be on Right Side Radio coming up here at 3 p.m., Mark McEthrin, Black Hawk crew chief, talking about the crash and what he thinks we could think or say about it. And then at 3:30 p.m., you know the deal, it's Thursdays. What do we do on Thursdays? We got a round of Butters and Lee. So, yeah, I bring in our buddy Butters and Lee from Huntsville, and we jump on in and just start wearing out the topics and see what happens. Butters and Lee coming up at 3:30, and then there's still a triple dipper today. So hit it, man.
The triple dipper. Three stories you've got to know.
That's right, the Triple Dipper, three stories, three themes, if you will, that you got to know as we run today's show. First out the gate, aircraft down. We're going to talk about it. It's a horrible situation going on right now in a place that I'm extremely familiar with because that's the Reagan Nationals where I fly into every time I'm in D.C. When I worked at the Pentagon, that was my chosen spot back and forth was out of Reagan National. And that plane went down last night, American Airlines flight with 64 souls on board and a Black Hawk helicopter with three more. So we have 67 people that appear to have all lost their lives. We're going to talk about it in detail as much as we can. And there's even a live press conference right now with the National Transportation Safety Board taking questions at a presser in D.C. If there's something to come of that, we'll let you know. So, coming up first, aircraft down. That's number one on the Triple Dipper. Number two, they didn't get to it yesterday, so I'm getting on it today. The new DOD, man, what is happening with our Department of Defense? Is it a new day? I would say yes, it absolutely is. Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth is in the seat, and things are already changing. I'll give you some key examples about what and where. The new DOD, number two on the Triple Dipper. And then number three, yeah, I'm going to try and do it justice. I mean, I am not a high-tech guru, and I didn't stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night, but this whole AI discussion is a little bit freaky. Skynet is here. Skynet is here. All right, we're going to talk about that, number three on the Triple Dipper with the brand new DeepSeek that was just released by a Chinese company. All right, all that and more, so stand by. That's the Triple Dipper. Let me jump on in, though, to the opening monologue. Every day we start the show with the Right Side Way monologue, and every day I'll remind you guys that attorney Stan McDonald, partner at the law firm of Wilmer & Lee, a 30-year veteran in the practice of law, Stan McDonald is the sponsor of the daily Right Side Way monologue, and I'll tell you more about him in just a few minutes. All right, well, let me just start by saying there's a fight brewing. You watch. I mean, the deep state is working overtime right now trying to figure out how to preserve their radical agenda. And the secret sauce they put on every liberal dish was just banned. I mean, DEI. DEI is on the outs. We've seen the results of it. DEI is where merit goes to die. I mean, it's just literally state legislatures like here in Alabama have already taken steps trying to end it. But the new Trump administration just issued orders to completely ban it. And even still, private businesses are finding that keeping a DEI office is bad for business and might make them less profitable. Why? Because DEI looks away from merit. DEI mandates racism. DEI mandates that values not be upheld. DEI actually destroys constitutional liberties, and all under the guise of making things wonderful. I mean, diversity, equity, and inclusion became a huge buzz phrase in the wake of the George Floyd, BLM, Antifa, Summer of Love. Everybody needed the DEI office to show how virtuous their particular organization, corporation, department, or university really was. We're here for you. We want diversity. We're oh so inclusive. Well, it turns out, more often than not, the medicine was worse for us than the problem it was designed to cure. Ostensibly, DEI is all about leveling the playing field, making sure that everyone has an equal stake in the outcome, celebrating the differences that make up our homogenous society by opening doors. But what has happened over and over, though, is more of a societal self-flagellation as we've been forced to face constant punishment for every special group's perceived grievances. I mean, diversity has become the buzzword for being allowed to exclude someone if they don't fit the agenda. Equity has become the secret ingredient for redistribution as they take something away from someone else to give to the aggrieved who haven't necessarily earned it. And inclusion? Well, it's really turned into exclusion, as values and whole demographics in our society have been told that, you know, they have privilege and are therefore going to lose their opportunities because they're just too much of this or too much of that. DEI has essentially taken the fight for equality and civil rights and liberty and just turned it all on its head in a bloodbath of revisionist effort to rewrite culture to fit a liberal narrative. Basically, instead of uniting society, DEI has served as a means to divide us. But I believe that was actually the point all along. So, case in point, last night we saw a horrific aviation disaster in our nation's capital. And we're still learning the details, but it does appear that almost 70 people lost their lives as a passenger plane collided with an Army helicopter while on final approach at Reagan National in Washington, D.C. There's no finger pointing here. Don't mistake what I'm about to say. We don't know the root causes. But being an air traffic controller, though, we know is a hard, intricate, stressful job. The FAA oversees all aspects of aviation safety and accident investigation. But early 2024, just last year, former Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg, well, he was proud to announce that the Federal Aviation Administration was actively recruiting workers who, and here's the quote, you ready, who suffer, quote, severe intellectual disabilities, psychiatric problems, and other mental and physical conditions under a diversity inclusion hiring initiative spelled out on the agency's website. Does that make any sense at all? And the short answer is no. 2 days ago, President Trump actually specifically ordered the FAA itself to end that program and to ensure that only individuals fully capable and best able to provide for the safety of air travel would be placed in those positions. Well, here in Alabama, the Alabama legislature has actually taken steps to tamp down the madness. The DEI slaughter got a major pushback when Senate Bill 129 passed into law last year in the State House. Suddenly, the woke institutions of learning and public governance had to check their agendas at the door and figure out how to send their liberal virtue signals by some other means. During an appearance on Alabama Public Television's Capital Journal, State Senator Will Barfoot, who sponsored the bill, he talked about it. He pointed out that the issue was not just here in Alabama, it's everywhere. But Alabama, though, he said, was choosing to take a stand against the DEI bloodbath. And in talking about it, Barfoot said this. He said, quote, DEI offices at higher institutions of education and public universities have really worked to divide us rather than unite us. DEI sounds inviting and sounds like something we should all get behind, right? But in fact, those DEI offices around the state, they've been used to silo people by race, by color, by religion, ethnicity, or national origin. Well, he was absolutely right. And I'm personally proud of the fact that Alabama, a state that many on the outside like to label as racist or divisive, has once again proven that it can overcome division. Now, keep in mind that while Alabama certainly has a past that is checkered and should not ever be excused or forgotten, that this is also the state that was the cradle of the modern civil rights movement. Alabama has had both Jefferson Davis and Martin Luther King among its citizens. And once again, we've identified a problem, taken steps internally to work it out and restore actual freedom and equality to the forefront of the discussion. So yeah, SB 129 is now the law. It limits the state-funded institutions who have been so eager in recent years to push for limitations on society rather than actual removal of barriers. Alabama law now ends DEI programs, including critical race theory, by any state agency or educational institution. And y'all, it's actually amazing that they have to now express that they will need to, you know, sort this out and consult with their legal counsel to find the way forward. But the deep state activists, they are still at work. Soon after that law was passed, the University of Alabama issued a statement signed by its chancellor and by the presidents of their three main university campuses, the main campus in Tuscaloosa, UAH, and UAB, trying to assure the outside world they will, quote, remain dedicated to the mission of providing exceptional educational research and patient care experiences to all people of all backgrounds in welcoming and supportive environments, blah, 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 blah. That's really just code words to the outside world that they'll do everything they can to remain as woke as possible under these new restraints assigned to them by their duly elected lawmakers. This, you know, divisive policies camouflaged under the ridiculous banner of DEI. We also learned, by the way, that UAB, that's the University of Alabama Birmingham's Hirsink School of Medicine, a very solid organization, a very solid school of medicine, they just simply decided to give their DEI office a brand new name. Same people, same mission, same woke agendas, new name. But some are more flagrant than that. There's a story that came out today about one of the biggest anomalies in education that I've ever seen. Did anyone know that Alabama has a public school dedicated to LGBTQ students? Go figure. I mean, I still don't understand for the life of me how the Magic City Acceptance Academy, a public charter school in Birmingham, ever got approved. But they did. And they have drag queens doing fundraisers for kids. A school that promotes itself not as an educational environment where learning is paramount, but a school that prides itself, pun intended, on sexual orientation. And yes, they still have their DEI statements prominently displayed in their official handbook and on the official website of this publicly funded educational institution in Red State, Alabama. So yeah, DEI has been a bloodbath in our society. And yes, I'm using that word intentionally. It has been the clarion call to the left to dismantle what so many have fought to instill in the freest nation on the face of the earth. DEI still needs the DIE, you know what I'm saying? It remains a battle in other places, and truthfully, we can't even lower our guard here in Alabama. Take a look at UAB, take a look at the Magic City Acceptance Academy. They're blowing it off, and they're trying to get around it. There is still work to do. The unwinding of the deep state DEI agendas is going to take time, but it's a fight worth having. A fight to restore the idea of merit, of promoting equality over equity. And elected officials who care deeply about this and even pass laws to fix it, they have to know that if the deep staters are going to go thumb their nose at the law and try to push their agendas anyway, that action is going to have to be taken, or the laws are going to be nothing but hollow and meaningless. So yeah, in summary, I guess I'd say DEI is apparently on the wane. The long nightmare of oversaturated guilt thrust on our society is coming to an end. But the deep state, man, they love their precious. It's their precious. It's their secret sauce to the progressive agenda. But DEI needs a DIE, like, soon. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. All right, well, we'll take the break. But listen, I'm just telling you, yeah, DEI is absolutely still ongoing. Don't think for a second that it's not. And them rebranding it, changing the name, shuffling things around, that's just nothing more than moving the deck chairs on the Titanic. It's still going down, right? We got to fix it. Got to fix it and got to stay alert and fix it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, saving the world one soundbite at a time. All right, text lines are open. 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Text it or call it. Same number for both. We'd love to have your commentaries as we go through the show. I got to tell you guys real quick before I go too much further. Attorney Stan McDonald, he is the sponsor daily of the Right Side Way monologue, like I just did a few minutes ago. Stan McDonald, I know him personally. Listen, he's a great guy. He's a solid dude. 30-year veteran in the practice of law in North Alabama. Not only will Stan advocate and fight for your legal needs, but y'all, that guy's been a warrior when it comes to the conservative political and social issues that Right Side ruffians out there care about. So listen, Stan McDonald, he can represent you in any court, whether it be local, state, federal. He can also say that he has represented his clients in thousands of real estate transactions over the years. He knows how to stand up for you. I like to say that if Stan McDonald's on your side, you're going to have no greater friend. Your adversaries would have no greater foe. So yeah, attorney Stan McDonald, the law firm of Wilmer and Lee. I'm going to tell you how to reach him here. I'm going to give you his number. You ready? Here we go. Stan McDonald, Wilmer and Lee. He's vigilant for those he represents. He's an America First family man. His phone number is 256-479-3020. That's Stan McDonald, 256-479-3020. And tell him you heard about it on Right Side Radio. And here's that stupid disclaimer. You ready? No representation made. The quality of legal service before is greater than quality of legal service before the other lawyers. I swear I said every word. I did. It's right there in front of me. I saw it. All right, man, this has been some more kind of a day. I don't know if y'all been watching the Cash Patel hearings. We've had it on live streaming. Yesterday, we live streamed RFK. Today, we live streamed Cash Patel. By all accounts, he has really held his own pretty well. And then Tulsi Gabbard was also today. RFK was also going on today. In fact, I saw that our Senator Tommy Tuberville, who was on the show last week, that he was...
earlier this week, wasn't it?
Was it earlier this week? What day is this?
I think it was on Monday.
It was this week. That's right. It was Monday. We tried to get him on last Friday. Couldn't get him. He came on Monday. That's right. But yeah, it's been something else to have these confirmations going on. These are the three that people say have the most potential for trouble when it comes to getting their votes. But by all accounts, they have just nailed it today. And listen, I don't think anybody has stumbled, fumbled, or mumbled their way through any of it.
Which, by the way, I mean, they did three rounds of questioning for Cash today, and I haven't checked. It may still be going on right now. But, I mean, 5 hours, that's nuts. I mean, I feel like it, just being able to sit there and take 5 hours of questioning qualifies you enough, honestly.
Listen, I as an attorney, I've done some long depositions. I've had depositions the last 2 days, you know, where you go like 7 hours one day and 8 hours the next day. Mm-hmm. It's exhausting because you're playing mental chess the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, it's mentally exhausting, I bet, for Cash to be going through all that.
He's basically on trial right now. Mm-hmm. And yet there is no rules of evidence. They can say what they want to say about him. They can make outlandish statements. They can scream at him, and there's no judge there to say, you know, stop. These confirmation hearings have really turned into just a goat rodeo, in my opinion.
It's just a political soundbite fest.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I didn't hear much substance of questions that actually were relevant to him being director of FBI, so...
Well, hopefully he's going to be the director of the FBI.
I agree.
Bring it. All right, listen, we got more of that. We'll talk about all of it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right, just covering down some major ground across the southeast U.S. of A. I'm talking about from Huntsville back over to Chattanooga. I'm talking about from Tuscaloosa back over to Gadsden. I'm talking about big old patches of Georgia and Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. All right, the text lines are indeed open, and we appreciate all of y'all chiming in. Bruce from Springville chiming in about my monologue. He says, DEI. It is just another watered-down name for the failed affirmative action. That is true. That is absolutely true. Dave from Madison checked in. He says, good monologue. You need to get the Mayor Battle of Huntsville to listen to it. Yeah, I don't know what's going on with Huntsville having their DEI office and just rebranding it under a different name. I mean, that does not seem in character, to be honest with you.
And it does not.
It does not. It something needs to get figured out there. But yeah, you guys want to text in, call in. The number is 833-687-4448. What you got,
Bob? By the way, we got a Twitter comment on the live stream. This lady, her name is LSG. She said, so apparently these Dems are concerned their names were mentioned before the grand jury Cash was a witness for, question mark. Did you hear that part of the hearing today?
No.
So they were barraging him about a grand jury, and I admit I'm not fully aware of.
See, grand jury proceedings are sacredly secret.
Mm-hmm. So they were asking him to have a classified hearing. Hearing later to talk to them about what he said in the hearing for some reason, and he just kind of kept saying that he would have to get with counsel before doing that. But it's kind of weird that they were so focused on that.
The Dems were asking about it,
mm-hmm.
So the Dems were nervous.
Apparently, yeah. I saw Schiff and who's the one from Connecticut? The really old guy was Blumenthal. He really honed in on it during one of his.
Yeah, Blumenthal was rude, man. He was brusque and rude. And I kind of expect that, but every once in a while you look at him and go, do you have any personal decorum at all? You wouldn't let anybody talk to your family member like that, but you're willing to do it right now because the cameras are on. This is awful. I tell you what, let me jump on the phone real quick. I got a call from Brian from Huntsville. Hey, man, how you doing?
Doing pretty well, sir. And I was thinking about what you folks were talking about 4 or 5 hours interviewing Cash Patel.
Yeah.
He doesn't have much of teleprompters. He may have a few notes. But even 5-6 years ago, how do you think that would have sat with Joe Biden? before he was president.
Oh, you know. Yeah.
That... Even back then, 4 or 5 hours, implausible.
No.
So why not let this man into his new job? Because a lot of people let Joe Biden into a job that he could not handle.
Yeah, no doubt. And then also, by the way, look at some of his nominees who got confirmed. It's like, wow. Yeah, good comment, Brian. Appreciate you, man.
Have a good one.
You too, buddy. These hearings are something else. We had a hilarious moment, though. You got that sound clip? Do you have that where you play it? I'm going to call audio clip number two, actually, is what I'm going to call it. This is an interesting exchange. So one of my favorite characters in the Senate is Senator John Kennedy from Louisiana. I don't know where that man comes up with the things that come out of his mouth, but he ought to write a book about quips and sayings. But he and Chuck Grassley had themselves a moment, and they're both Republicans, and it was good-natured. But it was also an icebreaker, I think. So
it was right after Klobuchar went over 3 minutes or like 3 minutes over her time.
Klobuchar, after she tried to wear out Kash Patel, mm-hmm. the Democrat. Play that clip.
Before we go to Lee.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, what do you want?
I love this guy. Mr. Chairman, I'm unlike Senator Tillis. I mean, if we're going to start this, I want an extra 3 minutes.
Well,
now my friend Senator Klobuchar went 3 minutes over.
So, here what you're saying is the chairman wasn't a very good chairman by not shutting her up. But I've gone through this before, and I think I know how to handle it. And get
I think you're a star-spangled awesome chairman. Okay. I just want to say that for the record. But if you're going to let somebody over there go 3 minutes over, I want my extra 3 minutes.
Well, let's see if it's abused by anybody else before we make that decision.
I'm just telling you, I'm going to abuse it.
Well, I'm not going to let you abuse it.
Cut it. There's still people, and there's still funny moments. I love John Kennedy, man. I got several text messages, and then I'm going to jump into the first dipper of the day, too. So Scott from Athens. Yesterday, I said this thing, JP, on the show. I said, Kash Patel, man, he's got crazy eyes. Kash Patel gives you those crazy eyes. Well, Scott from Athens is texting and says, I want to correct your statement from yesterday. It's Adam Schiff who has the crazy eyes. Kash Patel has fool around and find out eyes.
He does.
Yeah, he does.
By the way, while we're on the Kash Patel subject, and I have not been able to find a clip of it anywhere. I may have to go and pull it myself. They talked about Redstone Arsenal for about 2 minutes during the hearing today. I don't know if you heard that one, Katie Britt, when we're talking about bringing FBI headquarters to Huntsville.
Bring it!
And when she mentioned Huntsville, and Kash Patel goes, oh, yeah, Redstone Arsenal. You know, this is kind of cool. Like, it was on top of mind. And he said that he would come down and tour Redstone Arsenal if he was confirmed as FBI director. So,
well, the facilities at Redstone now are the second largest FBI facilities outside of D.C. I mean, they call it Headquarters South.
Yeah. But I thought it was pretty cool. I mean, Redstone Arsenal getting some attention up there.
Props.
And getting some props, and Kash Patel knowing, you know, off the top of his head, Redstone Arsenal, and that he's going to come down and tour it. That was pretty cool. And props for Katie Britt for bringing that up.
Yep, absolutely. Hey, listen, I'm gonna go ahead and begin kicking off the first dipper of the day. We'll touch base on these confirmations as the day goes on. We appreciate the fact that there's still like 25,000 of y'all live streaming with us and watching Right Side Radio. Thank you very much for that. I will say this. I got a text from Paul from Decatur. So, you know, this show is syndicated across parts of the Southeast, and one of our affiliate stations is WGOW out of Chattanooga. I became keenly aware when we got into the Tennessee markets. There's another Phil Williams. Now, I'm pretty sure that the name Phil Williams is the new John Smith, because when I served in the Alabama State Senate, there was a member of the Alabama State House who was also named Phil Williams. Luckily, we were both aligned and we're good friends, so I never had to worry about what he was doing. Not so much the dude in Tennessee. So I don't
know
if
you're... Not much
at all. No. So Paul from Decatur says, according to Yaffe this morning on his show in the AM, there's two Phil Williamses. One's on the right side here in Alabama, who has many awards from the U.S. Army. I do. Thank you. And he's a Christian and a great radio host. Well, thank you very much for all of that. The other Phil Williams is a so-called wannabe journalist who lives in Nashville. And on top of that, he's an idiot. And then he says nice things about me again. So, Paul, you are correct. There's this guy named Phil Williams.
He's with NBC, right?
With a local NBC affiliate, Channel 5, I believe, out of Nashville. And last night, This plane went down, and within minutes, he tweeted out blaming Trump. I mean, that's how far out the guy is. Just literally decided it had to be Trump's fault.
Not his first action wasn't to pray, say, you know, pray for the families, no. Pray for the victim. It's Trump's fault.
Yeah, absolutely. And I look at that and go, what is wrong with you? But speaking of which, aside from the fact that I ain't him and he ain't me, let me jump in this first dipper. Aircraft down. So, yes, I know that you've probably seen it, because if you turn the news on today, it is rightfully speaking one of the if not the top story. And we're watching right now, by the way, up on the screen, one of the screens here in the studio, Dan Driscoll, the Army Secretary nominee, is being considered for confirmation to serve as Secretary of the Army. He's also discussing this because it was an Army Black Hawk helicopter that was involved in the crash. So what we know is this thus far. A commuter flight out of Wichita, Kansas, flown under American Airlines banner, was flying in direct to Reagan National Airport. If you, like me, have ever flown into Reagan National, and I have flown in more times than I can count, if you've flown into Reagan, I was there last week. In fact, I flew into Reagan National last week for the inaugural. Charlene and I flew in together, and I chose it because it's one of my favorite airports. It's a manageable in size. It's direct in, you know, it's right smack in the middle of everything in D.C. When I say it's smack in the middle of everything, it is smack in the middle of everything. If you're not familiar, you literally fly on approach for landing along the Potomac. I mean, you're flying down the river, over the water, Washington, D.C. on both sides of you. You're passing the monuments. I mean, you're literally at one point as you're coming in for a landing, you are below the Washington Monument. That's literally where you are. But as you're on a final approach over the water, you the runway comes almost to the water. Last night, what we know is that there was a Black Hawk helicopter, which my understanding is, and there's different variants. I spent a lot of time in the military. I can tell you that the Black Hawk is a workhorse. I can still remember my first ride in a Black Hawk, flying Napa the Earth with the doors open. It was just awesome. But the Black Hawk has variants. They have the Navy version. They have the Special Operations MH-60 version. They have the UH-60, which is the general standard, you know, form. A workhorse version of the or variant of the Black Hawk. And this one, I believe, is known as a VH-60, which is there for VIPs. It's flown by a squadron or an air regiment, aviator regiment out of Fort Belvoir up near D.C., and their mission is VIP escort. So these are the fancy ones with the custom paint jobs and the seal of the United States on the doors, and they were apparently flying a training mission. And if you look at the map, they know from the radar signatures, they know where they were. And as the river intersects, you had the Black Hawk coming down, flying a training mission using the waterway as its IFR. Basically, I fly, you know, whatever's below me. And they're flying the contour of the rivers. And here comes this flight from American Airlines. And they collided. And it was not small. The video that I've seen, which is taken from a distance at night, you can see the lights of the two, and then you see an explosion in midair. Plane went down in the river. 67 souls have been lost. So that's where we are right now. The National Transportation Safety Board just did a press conference a moment ago. And I don't think they really had anything news except newsworthy to say, other than they will continue to apply what they call a whole-of-government approach to determining what is going on. But in the middle of it all, I got to thinking, there's got to be somebody who has some perspective. And then lo and behold, I came across a guy that I know this morning on social media who went viral. His name's Mark McEthrin out of Huntsville. He's going to call in here in a few minutes, but Mark used to be a Black Hawk crew chief. And what really struck me about his post was there's no assigning of guilt because it can't be yet. We don't know what happened. Is it just a pure D accident? Was an air traffic controller out of whack? Was there a pilot doing something wrong? Was there error in the tracking systems or the radar? I don't know. All I know is this. There's been a collision and 67 people are apparently dead. But Mark McEthrin gave a great sort of, you know, soliloquy post about all the distractions that are inherent in being a crew of a Black Hawk, especially when you're flying in what he would call a major urban environment. The stimuli is constant. And that's part of the job. I get it. But there's a constant need to assess indoors and outdoors. There's a constant need to assess certain gauges. There's a constant need to refer back and forth. You've got the air traffic control in your ear. You've got, and bottom line is there's a lot going on. And I thought, you know what? I think the audience needs to hear that. So we're going to have Mark on top of the hour. Now, here's one of the things that I do know, and this frustrates me. I'm not going to assign guilt right now because we don't know what happened. We do know that three soldiers died. We do know that air traffic control reacted. I've got the audio. Do you have that audio? I think it should be clip number one. Go ahead and get that thing postured. I'm going to call for that audio here momentarily. You can hear air traffic control talking to the flights. You let me know when you're ready. I tell you what, you're right. We'll take that after the break. Just go ahead and keep me straight there, brother. All right, so JP gave me the look and gave me the watch sign and like, oh, got to take a break. All right, listen, do this. I'm going to tell you when we get back about recent stuff about DEI in the FAA, and we've got the audio clip of air traffic control, and then coming up top of the hour, we got Mark McEthren calling in. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Hey, listen, I'm gonna go ahead and begin kicking off the first dipper of the day. We'll touch base on these confirmations as the day goes on. We appreciate the fact that there's still like 25,000 of y'all live streaming with us and watching Right Side Radio. Thank you very much for that. I will say this. I got a text from Paul from Decatur. So, you know, this show is syndicated across parts of the Southeast, and one of our affiliate stations is WGOW out of Chattanooga. I became keenly aware when we got into the Tennessee markets. There's another Phil Williams. Now, I'm pretty sure that the name Phil Williams is the new John Smith, because when I served in the Alabama State Senate, there was a member of the Alabama State House who was also named Phil Williams. Luckily, we were both aligned and we're good friends, so I never had to worry about what he was doing. Not so much the dude in Tennessee. So I don't
know
if
you're... Not much at all.
No. So Paul from Decatur says, according to Yaffe this morning on his show in the AM, there's two Phil Williamses. One's on the right side here in Alabama, who has many awards from the U.S. Army. I do. Thank you. And he's a Christian and a great radio host. Well, thank you very much for all of that. The other Phil Williams is a so-called wannabe journalist who lives in Nashville. On top of that, he's an idiot. And then he says nice things about me again. So, Paul, you are correct. There's this guy named Phil Williams.
He's with NBC, right?
With a local NBC affiliate, Channel 5, I believe, out of Nashville. And last night, this plane went down, and within minutes, he tweeted out blaming Trump. I mean, that's how far out the guy is. Just literally decided it had to be Trump's fault.
Not his first action wasn't to pray, say, you know, pray for the families, no. Pray for the victim. It's Trump's fault.
Yeah, absolutely. And I look at that and go, what is wrong with you? But speaking of which, aside from the fact that I ain't him and he ain't me, let me jump in this first dipper. Aircraft down. So, yes, I know that you've probably seen it, because if you turn the news on today, it is rightfully speaking one of the if not the top story. And we're watching right now, by the way, up on the screen, one of the screens here in the studio, Dan Driscoll, the Army Secretary nominee, is being considered for confirmation to serve as Secretary of the Army. He's also discussing this because it was an Army Black Hawk helicopter that was involved in the crash. So what we know is this thus far. A commuter flight out of Wichita, Kansas, flown under American Airlines banner, was flying in direct to Reagan National Airport. If you, like me, have ever flown into Reagan National, and I have flown in more times than I can count, if you've flown into Reagan, I was there last week. In fact, I flew into Reagan National last week for the inaugural. Charlene and I flew in together, and I chose it because it's one of my favorite airports. It's a manageable in size. It's direct in, you know, it's right smack in the middle of everything in D.C. When I say it's smack in the middle of everything, it is smack in the middle of everything. If you're not familiar, you literally fly on approach for landing along the Potomac. I mean, you're flying down the river, over the water, Washington, D.C. on both sides of you. You're passing the monuments. I mean, you're literally at one point as you're coming in for a landing, you are below the Washington Monument. That's literally where you are. But as you're on a final approach over the water, the runway comes almost to the water. Last night, what we know is that there was a Black Hawk helicopter, which my understanding is, and there's different variants. I spent a lot of time in the military. I can tell you that the Black Hawk is a workhorse. I can still remember my first ride in a Black Hawk, flying Napa the Earth with the doors open. It was just awesome. But the Black Hawk has variants. They have the Navy version. They have the Special Operations M860 version. They have the UH-60, which is the general standard, you know, form, workhorse version of the, or variant of the Blackhawk. And this one, I believe, is known as a VH-60, which is there for VIPs. It's flown by a squadron or an air regiment, aviator regiment out of Fort Belvoir up near D.C., and their mission is VIP escort. So these are the fancy ones with the custom paint jobs and the seal of the United States on the doors, and they were apparently flying a training mission. And if you look at the map, they know from the radar signatures, they know where they were. And as the river intersects, you had the Blackhawk coming down flying a training mission using the waterway as its IFR, basically I fly, you know, whatever's below me, and they're flying the contour of the rivers, and here comes this flight from American Airlines, and they collided. And it was not small. The video that I've seen, which is taken from a distance at night, you can see the lights of the two, and then you see an explosion in midair. Plane went down in the river. 67 souls have been lost. So that's where we are right now. The National Transportation Safety Board just did a press conference a moment ago. And I don't think they really had anything news except newsworthy to say other than they will continue to apply what they call a whole-of-government approach to determining what is going on. But in the middle of it all, I got to thinking there's got to be somebody who has some perspective. And then lo and behold, I came across a guy that I know this morning on social media who went viral. His name's Mark McEthrin out of Huntsville. He's going to call in here in a few minutes, but Mark used to be a Blackhawk crew chief. And what really struck me about his post was there's no assigning of guilt because it can't be yet. We don't know what happened. Is it just a pure D accident? Was an air traffic controller out of whack? Was there a pilot doing something wrong? Was there error in the tracking systems or the radar? I don't know. All I know is this. There's been a collision and 67 people are apparently dead. But Mark McEthrin gave a great sort of, you know, soliloquy post about all the distractions that are inherent in being a crew of a Blackhawk, especially when you're flying in what he would call a major urban environment. The stimuli is constant, and that's part of the job, I get it. But there's a constant need to assess indoors and outdoors. There's a constant need to assess certain gauges. There's a constant need to refer back and forth. You've got the air traffic control in your ear. You've got, and bottom line is there's a lot going on. And I thought, you know what? I think the audience needs to hear that. So we're going to have Mark on top of the hour. Now, here's one of the things that I do know, and this frustrates me. I'm not going to assign guilt right now because we don't know what happened. We do know that three soldiers died. We do know that air traffic control reacted. I've got the audio. Do you have that audio? I think it should be clip number one. Go ahead and get that thing postured. I'm going to call for that audio here momentarily. You can hear air traffic control talking to the flights. You let me know when you're ready. I tell you what, you're right. We'll take that after the break. Just go ahead and keep me straight there, brother. All right, so JP gave me the look and gave me the watch sign and like, oh, got to take a break. All right, listen, do this. I'm going to tell you when we get back about recent stuff about DEI in the FAA, and we've got the audio clip of air traffic control, and then coming up top of the hour, we got Mark McEthrin calling in. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. I got to tell you real quick, Flip from Priceville, Alabama. He just texted into the show and he said, I like Cash Patel's idea of relocating almost a third of D.C. FBI employees throughout the nation instead of sitting around D.C. Seems more productive to me. I'm thinking, yeah, just don't bring their politics with them down to Alabama. That's what I'm saying.
Well, have them go out and be cops, you know? And like he said, 98% of them are good people, but there's 2% of the bureaucrats that like to kick their feet up in their table in D.C. and do nothing. It's like, nope, go do your job. You know,
well, so. and granted, there's a ton of them, too, that are admin. Not everybody's going to be a field agent.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to be an investigator or there's going to be forensic specialists. There's going to be folks that have that are designed to be paperwork pushers. And that's part of it. We have to have them. You can't do without them. But I agree, man. If you can relocate whole departments to somewhere else and sort of diffuse things a little bit, maybe so. Maybe so. And there's a lot to be said for consolidation. But then right now, what you appear to have is a hotbed of people living inside of a bubble.
It's too much.
Too much bubble. You got that. All right, that audio clip. So a moment ago, we talked about, we were talking about the plane crash in D.C. Tragic set of circumstances. We don't know yet. They have not yet recovered all the black boxes. We know, though, that they have not been able to recover any live. I mean, there's basically everybody's gone is what they're saying. That's 67 people. It's the largest airline disaster in the U.S. in decades. And it's not small. There's going to be ripple effects. We're already finding out, by the way, that members of the U.S. figure skating team were actually on the plane. So we lost some of our star athletes. But you can hear, and by the way, I want to play something for you real quick. This is actual air traffic control. And for those of y'all that aren't used to, and I was an Army Pathfinder, so I've got some basic air traffic control training, so I listen for certain things, but I can tell you right now, I'm not an air traffic controller, so I'm not trying to portray myself as such. But there's one point in this little clip. It's very short. In fact, it'll play twice on a loop. But there's one place in the clip where you can hear an audible gasp in the background as the crash apparently occurred. Let's see if we can discern that on the radio. Go ahead and play it.
American 4782, by bat, now for individual. American 472, Oscar, one star, 3-2-3-1-7.
Did you see that?
Did you see that? American 472. American 3130, go around, turn left in, 250, climb in, 3000. Give us a 350-3000, American 3130.
American 4782, by bat, now for individual.
American 472, Oscar, one star, 3-2-3-1-7.
Yeah, do you hear that in the background?
Yeah, the gasp and the
Somebody in the background. Ooh, yeah. They could see it from the tower. They knew what had happened, and I don't know if they were seeing it as it was about to happen or if they saw it when it happened. But you can tell the reaction from the folks in the air traffic control. You can hear them right there. And by the way, those guys, there's a crew of them in there. If you've ever seen the inside of a tower, there's a crew of them in there, each talking to certain sectors and diverting planes and taking charge of certain flights. And my understanding was this particular flight was incoming, inbound to DCA, and was headed to, I think they were headed to runway 30, and they were diverted to 33. And so at the last minute, they were diverted, but that should not have changed their approach, really, for the most part. So air traffic controllers are all in there. You don't usually hear others in the background. So I would say that was probably more than just a, ooh, that was probably somebody shouting in the background.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's scary stuff.
That's some super scary stuff. Listen, I'm looking forward to, in a few minutes, we're going to have a friend call into the show. Mark McEthrin went viral this morning on social media when he posted the fact that he used to be a Black Hawk helicopter crew chief. And he knows about the level of... I don't want to say distraction, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but the number of things you have to maintain and monitor when you are in a Black Hawk crew like this. It's not just a matter of flying along and getting dozy because the rotor blades put you to sleep. No, there's a constant set of stimuli that has to be addressed. There's gauges to be read. There's outside air safety checks that have to be done. There's any number of things, especially when you're flying in formation with other birds. All said and done, I think the guy's going to call in with a perspective that'll help us to picture what could have been going on inside that Black Hawk. In the meantime, we're taking a break. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama and Tennessee syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, listen, there's certain things you hate to hear. I mean, you know, my time in Baghdad, more than once hearing troops in contact over the radio is a sound that gives chills. The other thing you don't want to hear, I'm sure, as an air traffic controller or anybody, is aircraft down. And we had a bad situation right now in D.C. out of an airport that I love, my time at the Pentagon especially. I can't tell you how many times I flew out of DCA, Reagan National. And the approach is straight down the Potomac onto the airfield. And so I know the area. I understand the lay of the land. I know that there's a very congested environment. It's probably a heavy on stimuli kind of environment because it's in the middle of a major metropolitan area. I mean, like in the middle. It's not on the outskirts like Dulles would be. It's in the middle. But that being said, I can't tell you how much time I've spent in Blackhawks. But I've never been a crew chief in a Blackhawk, obviously. And then I came across a friend of the show this morning on social media, Mark McEthren. And Mark is the host of the Bearded Federalist podcast and just a rock-solid conservative, a right-side ruffian. But what I didn't know was he was also a hard striper. He was an E-5 crew chief on Blackhawks, and he's got some perspective. And he's actually on the phone right now. Mark McEthren, how you doing, man?
I am blessed, Phil. Better than I deserve. Long time right side ruffian, and what an honor to be on the show with you today.
Oh, man. Well, thank you for what you do, and thank you for your service, and thank you for being in the mix on conservative values and all. And I know, by the way, you went viral today, and you're actually going to be on, I think, News Nation tonight, too, aren't you?
That's right, 9 p.m. with Ashley Banfield. It's crazy, but I'm just hoping I do these soldiers and their families right today.
Well, I have no doubt you will. Thank you for your service, by the way. So let me ask you this, man. How much time did you spend in the Army?
6 years, 2 months, and 4 days. I was extended while I was on medical reserve and I ended up being medically retired after that amount of time, but it was a quick and wild 6 years of the best job I ever had. It was great. It ruined roller coasters for me, but other than that, it was fun.
Were you in the aviation branch the entire time?
Yes, I was, yep.
And so you earned the spot as a crew chief on a Blackhawk. Where were you? Who'd you serve with?
So I was initially out of the 159th Aviation out of Fort Campbell, Kentucky.
Yeah.
And then I went to Korea for a couple of years and then back in the air assault loop to Fort Campbell. So that was pretty much it. Just from 2000 to January 2007. So
that's good duty, yeah. Man. So listen, you put a post out this morning in the wake of this crash. And granted, I think every third post is somebody who's an expert now on social media about something to do with aviation. And
yeah.
But I read yours, and there's no denying it. I mean, you've been there, done that. And what I thought was huge was you didn't try to assign blame, but you did talk about from a firsthand perspective what life is like inside the Blackhawk as you're flying, and then you also assess that from the major stimuli that comes from being in a major metropolitan environment. So give us the lay of the land, brother. What must that have been like and going on at the time of the accident?
Sure, yeah. No, their hands are full all the time. When you're flying those aircraft, there's a lot of coordination going on. There's a lot of stimulus coming from every direction. The pilots are reading. One pilot is literally reading a checklist from on their lap, the actual physical paper book. It's not up on a HUD display or anything like that. It's attached to their leg. And they'll be reading through their checklist, and it's required by law that they go through that. From what I understand, this aircraft had just finished refueling. So that's at least 2.5 hours of flight already there. Do a refuel, back at it. Fatigue starts to set in. So you're reading off that checklist and making sure you're doing everything correctly. Well, another pilot, they're pulling the collective on that aircraft to get altitude and get speed, which means their eyes are likely looking at the torque indicators, the rotor speed indicators, all the information on the panel dealing with the actual mechanics of the aircraft. The crew chief normally does airspace surveillance and obstacle avoidance.
That'd be you.
We are, yep, that's what I would be doing. Usually I literally would have my head out the window where I can look up, down, and behind us and all around. However, there's occasionally times where I need to come back inside the aircraft and assist the pilots with fuel checks. So I'll be looking at the fuel gauges and the clocks and writing them down to notate that so I can do it again in a little bit and do the math to figure out the rate of burn. So pilots are doing math, I'm doing math, everyone's listening to a bunch of radios. You got a lot of chatter going on in a space like that. Then you've got all the stimuli from all the lights and stuff happening around you. It gets pretty chaotic in there, and a crew that's worked together for a while you learn how to work together like that, and it becomes kind of a symphony of action. That's kind of the chaos that they're dealing with.
Well, and you're right. It's organized chaos the entire time because the stimuli is not the same every second. It's changing as you go. And I can just tell you, as an Army jump master, having to do outside air safety checks just for the approach to the drop zone, you're literally outside the bird, like you said, looking up, down, forwards, backwards, the whole thing, scanning for outside air safety issues. But when all that's going on right now in a major metropolitan environment, I don't know if you ever flew. Apparently, you didn't fly out of Belvoir at all, did you?
No, not as a crew chief. I did support that unit later. When I got out of the military, I was a contractor and still involved in Army aviation for many years there. And I fielded them their servers and laptops and stuff to do all of their flight records and things there. Wow. So I'm familiar with the area and that unit.
Well, am I correct in saying that the guys out of Belvoir fly the variant of the Black Hawk called the VH-60, which is designed for VIP travel? Is that correct?
Yes, they do have a branch that does that. They support all the ambassadors and whatnot in that area. They have beautiful birds.
Well, they're usually the shiny ones.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep. And they're usually very well trained guys. Like, they have high hours. I think I read today that this crew chief had 1,000 hours.
Wow.
On that bird, so yep, they're usually pretty well trained.
Well, that was my next question. I think you may have just answered it. So this particular crew, being in that regiment, that aviation regiment, are they hand selected? Do they have to kind of earn the right to be in this unit, with more experience than the average, or is this like just something that's just a matter of, you know,
no,
being assigned?
That particular unit is not quite like that. It's, you just come down in a PERS-GRAM assignment and PCS there when the Army sends you there. But that is some of the details I have. When I was in Korea, the unit I served with there had a VIP branch as well. So you will find that in various units. Fort Campbell has their own unit like that. And so this one, located right there in D.C., you can imagine the VIPs that they take care of.
Well, yeah, I can. In fact, it's not uncommon, apparently, this unit to actually fly the SecDef himself. But,
correct.
Well, listen, I mean, I don't know, and I don't know all the ins and outs. I did see that someone just posted, like I said, everybody's an expert right now, but I did see that someone just posted a moment ago that the approach to runway 33, which is where the incoming plane was en route, and we don't know who was at fault, air traffic control, the pilots of either aircraft, we don't know, if anybody. But what I am seeing here is someone is saying that if you look it up right now, max altitude for helos that were flying across the approach to runway 33 would have been 200 feet AGL. And these guys in the 60 were flying at 350 AGL above ground level. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, that's common. So after every flight that we do, we have, I mean, you're familiar with this process, but after every mission we do an after-action review. We cover what went right, what went wrong, and how to mitigate it. And there's never a flight that you are on, there's never a mission that you do where you do not have things in the what went wrong category. It always happens. And so these are humans, and they make mistakes. And they're, like we said, there's a lot of stimulus, a lot of things going on there. So being out of position a couple hundred feet, not unusual. It's common, it's frequent, it happens. It's not supposed to. We are trained to not do that, but like we said, we get task overload and exhaustion, fatigue hitting in there, and then the potential for mistakes and errors increase. And there's anytime you see an accident report on aircraft, it's a series of contributing factors. It's never one thing or one person to hold responsible here. It's always a whole series. We have air traffic control calling out, asking that aircraft, hey, do you see that other aircraft? That's not a helpful question. When you're in the aircraft, you need to hear, do you see that aircraft at 12 o'clock, 3 miles out, 100 feet above you?
Yeah.
You need the direction, altitude, and the distance. And so you add to that, you know, they're flying at night dealing with lights. Lights are on the ground in a major city like that. Lights on aircraft can get buried in there. We have optical illusions that happen just because there's no reference point in the sky. You would have a common one that would happen is called continuous. My brain's forgetting.
The continuous parallax or
It's a motion parallax. Yeah. It is a motion parallax, but it's the way I would train my soldiers with that is I'd take a flashlight and hold it in front of their face, and I'd show if I moved it left, right, up, or down, they can tell it's not coming at them. But when you hold it straight at them and you put it, come towards them, it's not moving. If you have a light that's buried in the lights of the city that's not moving, you may not see that.
Yeah.
And you're on a collision course. There's a lot of factors that can come into play. We are trained to observe that, recognize that, and try to deal with that. But again, it's task overload and chaos. I see the pilot had one of the pilots was a female that had 500 flight hours. That's not very much, but she was probably under the supervision of a more advanced pilot that's in charge there. And so,
well, it's a sad situation, no matter how you look at it. And they were flying, and people don't realize too, 200 to 300 feet. That's not really high. It sounds like it is. But when you're sitting on the ground looking up, you can see the whites of their eyes if the doors are open. I mean, it's like they're flying at a reasonably low level. I wouldn't call it nap of the earth, but they're flying low level technically through the city. Am I right?
Absolutely, it's a 4-second drop.
Yeah,
it's very low.
Yeah. Well, listen, Mark. Again, thanks for your service. Thanks for who you are. Thanks for being a part of the Right Side Ruffian family, and we appreciate you making time for us today, man. Bringing some perspective.
It's absolutely an honor for all of the above, Phil. Thank you.
All right, brother. We'll talk to you again soon. Take care.
Yeah, you too.
All right. I ran long to be with Mark as long as I could, but I got to go to a break right now. But listen, there's a perspective you're not hearing anywhere else. There's what it might have been like to be inside the crew. Can you imagine? You're trying to blend the lights of aircraft that are nearby you with lights of the city that you're flying at literally below some of the rooftop levels as you come through the city, flying along the rivers, and then calamity. Aircraft down. All right. God bless them. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just pulling pins on truth grenades. That's what we're doing. Hey, by the way, coming up in the very near future, like in a matter of, I don't know, maybe next week, the Right Side merchandise store goes live. We got, we got some cool stuff, too. Let me tell you, we got T-shirts, we got hats, we got coffee mugs of different styles. And, oh, by the way, my favorite is the Ben Shot glasses engraved with the Right Side logo that have the embedded 308 shell or bullet right smack in the glass. It's just cool. Right Side merchandise store going live. You'll find all of it at the rightsidemedia.org website. So check that out whenever you want to, but be advised. We'll tell you when the store is up and running. And by the way, today being Thursday, did we have the latest Liberty Minute come out? Yeah, so our latest, we have a series of podcasts, and the one that came out today is Jared Hudson, the former Navy SEAL who does the Liberty Minute podcast, part of the Right Side Media team. But Jared's most recent edition of the Liberty Minute came out today. You can find all of it at rightsidemedia.org, or you can go to our YouTube channel and find it all there. Listen, just do us a favor. Hit like or subscribe on any of this, because that's how those platforms let us grow as a company. And since there's like 26,000 of y'all live streaming with us right now, it would mean the world to us if you did. It really actually helps us grow as a media company just to have likes and subscribes. It means the world. All right, let me go to the phones right now. Sparky from Harvest is on the line. Hey, my brother, how are you?
I am good. I enjoyed the discussion with the last gentleman. He clearly knew what he was talking about. I agree with him 100%. I spent 26 years active in Army aviation and then another 15 years after that flying for the local test center here. And I got to teach and proctor sessions on aircrew coordination training, what the Navy and the civilians call crew resource management. 80-some percent of all our Army accidents are human error/ aircrew coordination, failure to communicate, to communicate well, things said wrong or things not said at all. But all that said, I'm watching the evidence come in on this mishap, and I got to put the main onus, no matter what any of the pilots in either aircraft did, possibly not quite right, air traffic control.
Yeah,
that was some really poor airspace and separation management on the part of the air traffic controllers, and I can't even imagine how they let those aircraft get that close together, let alone collide like that. It's huge mistake on the part of air traffic controllers.
I think we're going to find that something. Maybe there was a perfect storm. Maybe there was a combination of errors. Maybe each entity involved had some part in the play here. But I think you're right. I think we're going to find that air traffic control allowed far too much clutter in the approach, and that's the recipe for disaster right there. When you've got those, you know, birds all too close to each other like that, it's just no way. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, the Army aviators were on a different frequency, still hearing air traffic control, but they were not on the exact same freak as the plane.
Yeah, and that's bad. It depends on whether the approach controller handed that airliner over to tower, and where our guys monitoring approach control and not tower.
Yeah.
I'll say this about, they're on very specified routes. And anybody out of the 12th Aviation Battalion out of Belvoir to fly in that airspace, that Class B airspace around Washington Reagan, you have to pass a detailed check ride demonstrating your intimate knowledge of those low-level routes.
Well, Sparky, I hate it. The music's playing. I got to go. But as always, we appreciate your perspective and your service, brother. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Coming up next, Butters and Lee. Y'all stay tuned. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the southeast U.S. of A. I'm talking about from Huntsville over to Chattanooga. I'm talking about from Tuscaloosa over to Gadsden. Y'all, I'm talking about big old patches of Georgia and Mississippi all thrown in just for good measure. All right, Right Side Radio has got folks that do a lot of work, that keep a lot of things going right. And two of those come in every week on this. That was kind of cool. You admit it. But anyway, there's two folks who come in every week and do a segment with us. And they both are just super important to this Right Side family. And so we just do a segment we like to call Butters and Lee. All right, right here in the studio, Butterman. Hey, buddy, how you doing?
I'm doing great. It's been a great day.
You got the limited edition hat on.
I do.
There's only two of those in the world.
I know.
You and I have them.
Mine is available at auction.
Okay. All right, and then calling in from the upper reaches of our listening area near Tennessee line, that would be Lee from Huntsville. Hey, Lee, how you doing?
I'm good, but I don't have a hat. Well, I'm just putting that out there.
We can work that. But you do have the T-shirt.
I do. So.
You do. All right, listen, here's the way this works for our listening audience and all of y'all who are streaming with us right now, because there's a ton of you. Like, we're looking at 26,000 people streaming with us as we speak. But we ask questions. They have answers. We debate the outcome. And then we flip the script, and they just ask me questions, and I wait and see where it goes. So here's my first question for you guys, and I'll lay the foundation for it. So so people are often rather surprised to find out that in Alabama, we actually have a charter school, which is a variant of a public school, in Birmingham, and it's called the Magic City Acceptance Academy. Nifty name, sounds like unicorns and all. The Magic City Acceptance Academy, and believe it or not, it's actually a school whose primary focus is to provide a so-called safe environment for LGBTQ students and their so-called allies. All right. I mean, it's literally a school for gay kids is what it boils down to, which you look at it and go, how'd they do that? But they did. That being said, our state also passed laws against allowing DEI to be promoted in public institutions to include schools. So the Magic City Acceptance Academy apparently refuses to take down their DEI policies off their website. And I feel like I'm filibustering here, but the bottom line is, what should the legislature do about entities like Magic City and others who were trying to just pretend that they didn't pass a new law that said take down DEI? What should they do about it? Lee, I'm going to let you start. What do you got?
Well, they should put teeth in their laws, which they don't. And that's always my problem with the laws coming out of the state of Alabama. They sound good, but if you don't have any actual consequences, why should anyone care what you pass?
Yeah.
They can just ignore you, and there's no repercussions. So this is a form of discrimination, and strange, to be honest with you. And it's not a, I think if you got right down to it and dug into what this school is teaching, I think some of it people would find extremely questionable. So I think they need to be completely defunded by the state. And I have a feeling if you let the new administration know, hey, they're refusing to take down DEI and all this, you could be looking at some loss of federal funds.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree, and they're definitely. By the way, being a charter school does not mean they're not public. They're taking tax dollars. They absolutely are.
Oh yeah.
And they had to go through like 2 or 3 years of applications to get their charter, and how they got it, I still don't understand. Butters, your thoughts on this, man? What should the legislature do about the folks that just blow off the law?
Okay, so I think there's a slippery slope of swinging the pendulum the other way here. And I think, it's the question needs to be what's the desired end result
of what?
Of what we're going to do with these laws and what we're doing with DEI, yeah. Right? So we want school choice. And if schools want to build an atmosphere that we don't necessarily or others don't necessarily agree with, however that system works, that needs to be set up in place. And if folks want to go there, I think natural selection will take care of itself, in time. The DEI side of it, yeah, you know, I've thought a lot about this, you know, since that's kind of made the headlines. DEI for this group of people is probably more like a religion than it is some sort of
like
practice. So that's what they want to have in their schools. So I definitely don't agree with it. And obviously, if they're meeting whatever academic standard they've got to meet for the state, it's a messy tangle right now because of the DEI laws and all those, you know, those type of things. You know, the school choice thing is not fully in effect, and yet it's using tax dollars. But I would just say we got to think about what's the desired end state of what we want this to look like.
So I think, okay, both of y'all, good answers. I think with regards to, like, for instance, Magic City by itself, the Acceptance Academy, the reality is there's a real gray area, especially in the light of the Supreme Court decisions on allowing demographics to guide the populace of a school, any school. It's an affirmative action for gay kids is what it boils down to in terms of who's in this school. It's designed just for that. And they'll try to tell you it's not. Oh, yes, it is. Rainbow flags. They have drag queen story hour. They do drag queen fundraisers for student body issues. It's absolutely 100% that. And it's really on the margins of what is allowed even under constitutional law, much less the question of whether it just should. The second thing, though, about the DEI, they're not even playing. Their website says diversity, equity, inclusion, and that's what we call it, and that's what it's going to be. And so I think Lee has got it nailed. The legislature has got to quit passing laws that have no teeth in it. Otherwise, all you did was pass a good idea, period.
That's very true. Very true for sure.
All right. Wow. That's a good round. All right. Let me go to the next question then. Round one, question two, Butters and Lee. I'll go to you first this time, Butters. So the confirmation hearings this week, I mean, it's been like an e-ticket at Disneyland. It's been a roller coaster, man. Like with your hair swept back while you're watching some of the questioning going on. Fast, furious, everybody's hair's on fire. Makes you want to look back and see more anyway, though. The rubbernecking is like, what did she say? What did he say? Where'd that go? Let me ask you this. Do you anticipate any of these nominees not being confirmed? And what are your thoughts on where things are so far?
It sure seems like they're all going to make it through and that they're working the numbers. It sounds like a lot of grandstanding. One of the biggest things that stuck out to me is just how politicized and how, how
it's absolutely
we got to take our sides and there's no genuine thought. I mean, Bernie Sanders is just such a grand example in his discussions with RFK. Like Bernie, I thought you were, what? You're on the same side and here he is just absolutely given what for. But I think all these nominees have done a phenomenal job. My hope is that there's a lot of people going, look, they've got all their, they are suitcased on how they're doing this process and they've got a plan. They're executing. It's a joy to watch professionals go do some good stuff and give me some confidence that our yeah. government's in good hands.
Yeah. I tell you, I won't poison the well. I'll go straight to Lee. Lee, your thoughts. How has the confirmation process been for you so far, and what do you think about them all getting confirmed?
Well, it's been really interesting to watch, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, it has.
And the level of hypocrisy is just, you can cut it with a knife, you know, where, and when RFK called out Bernie Sanders about being the top recipient of pharmaceutical money,
yes.
I thought he was going to come up out of his chair.
It was righteous.
Table. Oh, it's so true. And you know who the number two is?
Pocahontas. Yeah, I was about to say Pocahontas. That's exactly right.
Yeah. So I just think it's funny that they are just so irate, you know, because, but it's kind of faux indignation, all of it. And he was demanding that, I think Bernie was demanding he, you know, agree to publicly funded health care and all this. I'm like, what do you think he can do? Wave a magic wand? He's the Secretary of Health and Human Services. He's not. That would be your job in Congress.
Yeah. He even said that at one point. He even said, I believe that's Congress's job. And then
right.
Bernie kind of came out
like
of the seat on that one, too.
I'm like, what's the point? But I think I could definitely see it going down to the wire and having to be decided by the vice president on any or all of them. But I don't know that they would have put them forward through this process had they not had the assurances that they would pass.
Yeah, I mean, Matt Gaetz pulled out early because they could see that
right.
it wasn't going to work. In this case, I don't know. I still wonder, did they think that Pete Hegseth was going to have a better margin than he did?
Yeah.
So let me ask
they
you this.
They didn't anticipate McConnell, I don't think.
I don't think so either. I think McConnell was the one they thought would come around, and then he didn't. So let me ask you this real quick,
I mean,
both of you.
He's a rhino.
Well,
he's a turtle-rhino mixture.
Well,
he's disgusting, and he needs to be out of Congress. He's as bad as Joe Biden, standing around looking like he doesn't know what's going on. But I think that any of them, it could come down to that. But I think they'll probably all pass. At least I pray they do. They're all going to be good.
I think it could be a good thing if Vice President Vance has to get in there and vote on all of them. I mean, it kind of is like it sends a message. You know, because it's
a win's a win.
Yeah.
At that point, the margin matters
right.
not as long as you get the win. And I think Trump even said something like that too when he found out about Hegseth. He goes, "It's still a win." What I don't know is if they go down, like if they don't make the vote, can Trump renominate them later and do a recess appointment? And I don't know about that. If they failed in the confirmation process, all I know is this. I looked at some of the selections. I'll be the first to admit, when I first heard Pete Hegseth, I was like, what? Pete Hegseth, the Fox News guy? And I am all on board. I mean, I have researched him. I have looked into it, and I am good with it. And right now, Kash Patel, listen, man, that guy's holding his own. He's getting hammered today, and he's sitting there calm, cool, and collected. I don't know who gave him, you know, a little something to help him calm his nerves, but that guy's got it going on right now.
Like I said, I think.
Oh, he didn't need it. He's got nerves of steel. When he and Devin Nunes did that investigation together, you don't think he, was threatened? And I mean,
He did. He even said.
I think you can't shake him. I don't think you can shake him.
He even said his family had to move houses because they were being doxxed.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think it, you know, the more the Dems keep doing this and showing their rear end in these confirmation hearings, I think it's just helping move things in the right direction. I think it's forcing a lot of really good conversations, really kind of across the board.
Yeah.
Going, huh, yeah. Like you just said, a lot of us going, Pete Hegseth, what?
And it worked.
Yeah, I guess we don't have to have a general take over as a Secretary of Defense. Like, yeah, maybe that's...
Somebody doesn't have to come out of the executive suite of the defense industry to do things. All right, we got to take a break. All right, that's the end of round one, Butters and Lee. We'll come right back. This is where we flip the script. They ask me questions. I don't even know what's coming. I wait and see if I can answer off the cuff. Usually I do. Sometimes, nah, I do. I'll make it. Well, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. All right, back to round two with Butters and Lee. I'm going to shift the gears over to Lee first. Lee, what is your question for moi?
So, gambling is rearing its head again.
Oh, yeah.
The legislature is getting ready to go back into session, And my concern is that even though Pro Tem Gudger is just basically saying, you know, well, it's not on my radar, I think is what he said, and Ledbetter and the House said it too, but that concerns me because that's just a way to kind of shuffle it off. Last year, so many good bills died on the vine waiting for a vote because of gambling. And if that happens again this year, I'm going to scream, because we need things voted on and done in this state, and this constant obsession with tying everything up is just getting on my nerves. So my question for you is, should they not just put each one of these things up for a vote for the state to choose? You know, just put like the lottery and maybe scratch offs up for a vote, and then sports betting up for a vote, and then casinos up for a vote. Because casinos aren't going to win, and they know that. People probably would vote for lottery and
So I'm confused. You're saying you don't want gambling to take up time, or you do want gambling to take up time? Because what you just described is five bills.
Where it can be, where we can be vote. No, I'm saying, yeah, either vote a clean bill for them and just vote it, or put it up for the people to vote at election time.
So they won't do that. So for the benefit of all of those people who are streaming online or may not live in Alabama who haven't seen our politics, for decades now, the gambling interests in this state have been corrupting our state politics like nobody's business. I mean, it's been ungodly. I was down there, saw stuff happen that we, like, you look at it and go, why is that even being tolerated for a second? And every single year, it seems like, they bring up a bill to try and expand casino gaming in the state. And I don't care how you feel about casino gaming. That doesn't matter. What matters is these bills never, ever look like what Republicans say we stand for. They always grow government, they raise taxes, and they even give monopolies to people who've been breaking our laws. So it's been a horrible set of circumstances. But every time they do this, the gambling interests and their lobbyists cloud up the legislative process so much that, like Lee just said, good, solid, conservative bills die on the vine because they can't get the floor time because of all the filibusters and everything else related to gambling. So, yes, my sincere hope is we are not going to see it happen. I'm hearing senior leaders in the Alabama legislature saying there's not the votes for it, so we're not going to bring it up. We're late in the quadrennium. They all start running for office again in about 3 months. So my thinking is it really isn't going to happen this year. But Lee, to your, and I'll do it real quick because I got to get to Butter's question too, but they're probably never going to bring a clean bill. Clean bill meaning one thing at a time like you're talking about, because the gambling casino magnates really, really, really want to put it all together because they know that folks might vote for a lottery, and if they can put them in the same bill, they'll get their casino too. And yet, that's also what always kills everything. People who wonder why we don't have a lottery in the state of Alabama, which I'm still not a fan of, it's because the gambling interests kill their own bills every year by overreach. So,
yep.
I could go an hour on that. I saw stuff down in Montgomery that curl your hair on this issue, but. But now I gotta stop curling my hair for a minute and go to Butters. Butters, pray tell, what question? Do you have anything that will inflame my passions like Lee just did?
Possibly.
Okay.
So let's talk about Mayor Woodfin.
Oh my gosh!
In Birmingham.
Holy cow!
Sorry, social media is kind of near and dear to my heart. Not
Liberal
sure if you knew
Mayor
that or
Randall
not.
Woodfin.
So he's apparently started blocking a bunch of his constituents on the old interwebs.
Sensitive much?
Yeah, I guess, you know, you try to put your big boy pants on and engage in big boy conversations and make comments about eggs, and everybody starts turning on you. What's up with that? I guess two questions. Should he be doing that?
No.
And two, what is going on with Birmingham? Why can't they fix this?
I don't know. So there's no way I can answer that second
legal
question. And by the way, Lee's right. He's on the verge of being in the realm of illegality here, because the if it's an official account and he is blocking constituents, then he's in violation of the law, because a elected official is not supposed to be able to do that. And there are court rulings that say so. But here's the other thing. Randall Woodfin is not known for having thick skin. He's a prima donna. He's a diva. He likes to be the cool guy. You know, he'll wear his legalized pot T-shirt to city council meetings as the mayor of one of the biggest cities in the Southeast. You know, wears tennis shoes with his suit all the time. He's the bay, and you know, shows dancing videos of him with his paramour on the roofs of Birmingham. And then when people start harping on the fact that we have one of the highest murder per capita rates in the Southeast United States, in the whole United States, he starts blocking people on social media. So I don't know which one of y'all got me more fired up, Lee about gambling or you about liberal Mayor Randall Woodfin. All I know is I love you both. Butters and Lee, thank you for your time. We're going to the third hour. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama and Tennessee syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios, man. We got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international. And, oh, yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number three on a Friday Eve. Friday Eve, that's what we like to call it around here. Friday Eve, that being Thursday. I'm going to go to number three on the Triple Dipper in just a minute, but I got to read a few text messages first. If you want to text the show, you want to call the show, same number for both, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. What do we got here? Dave from Madison said, when I was younger, I took a few lessons in a Cessna. Cessnas naturally want to fly. Very easy. I've been told helicopters want to crash, meaning you have to be on your toes every second you're flying, unlike a plane. Well, you are. You're fighting against competing batches of energy in a helo. I mean, you're literally having to pull pitch and keep rotors and everything going in the right direction, and then it's something else. And it's one of those things where I can't say this for everything. I'm not an aviator by any stretch, and I'm not a helicopter aviator for sure. But I can just tell you that there's oftentimes it's both hands and feet and eyes and all of it at the same time.
I wish my grandfather was still around. He flew Hueys in Vietnam.
He did.
And times like this, it'd be nice. Curious for his input on stuff like that. Helicopters are, like you said, they want to crash.
They just want to crash.
Yeah.
They're trying to kill you at all times. Tom with all the kids checking in. He said, I was almost in a mid-air collision at Fort McCoy, Wisconsin, in the early 90s in a UH-1 as a Huey on night vision training. Oh, man, gosh. Listen, I can't imagine. I would love to be able to fly a helicopter, but flying a helicopter with NODs, with night optical devices, that is like next level. And the guys that fly in the, especially in the Special Operations Aviation Regiment, the 160th SOAR, those guys literally fly by NODs probably more than anybody else, and they're constantly flying with goggles on.
It's low levels too.
Oh my gosh, mm-hmm. Those guys live the life.
Yeah,
and I mean like woo. Brian from Huntsville checking in says he agreed with Lee during the whole segment there with Butters and Lee. He says state and federal, we need clean bills. Omnibus be doggone. Yeah, so what he's talking about there is Lee was referring to the gambling legislation, which I don't think is going to come up this year. It's possible, but it's still what they keep doing. Like I said, is they slap it all into an omnibus bill, and they try to get it all passed. Never works, and my hope is it never works because it's never right. It's always filled with corruption, filled with everything that Republicans don't stand for. And it's a complete mess.
By the way, with the next session coming up, I've been getting some ads on my Instagram lately. I don't remember I can't remember what account or who is running the ad, but it was something about how Alabama loses this many million dollars to neighboring states every year because of no gambling or whatever. And I've seen it like a couple times a day. It seems like the last couple of weeks.
It's such a crock.
It's interesting.
If that's all we cared about was a dollar sign, we'd already have it.
Exactly. Yeah. But I just find it interesting, the timing. It's like, hey.
And I tell you what. Here's an idea: if we're that concerned about the dollar signs related to the gambling interest in the state, then why don't we go talk to the guy that owns Green Track who hasn't paid taxes in years and still wants to have a monopoly opportunity in the new legislation? I mean, just wow. Mm-hmm. And why do we keep rewarding these bad actors? I don't know. I can't even begin to fathom.
But then, like you said, it takes time away from other bills.
Oh, all the productive good stuff dies on the vine.
Yeah.
I got one more. I got somebody here hit me up on social media. By the way, you can follow us, and a lot of y'all are today. Thank you so much for the 26,300 people that are streaming live with us right now online. You can catch us at Right Side Media on X. You can also catch us on my personal account at Sen Phil Williams. It's S-E-N at Sen Phil Williams on X. We're also on Rumble, Twitch, YouTube, and through our website, rightsidemedia.org, where all of our stuff is. I mean, if you want to see our recommended reading list, if you want to see things that we write, if you want to see any one of the five podcasts that we have through Right Side Media, it's all at rightsidemedia.org. Tom Schaefer checks in on Twitter. He says, air traffic control asked the Blackhawk in this crash we have now if he could see the jet. He said, normally they would say, Blackhawk, you have traffic at 9 o'clock, 400 feet. Do you have it in sight? So the Blackhawk, he says, was in the wrong place. Failure on both parts here. And he says, by the way, I'm a retired Blackhawk pilot. Tom, thank you for your service. And I think there's going to be a lot to discern here. There's also an out-of-position question because somebody said that the Blackhawk may have been flying at about 350 feet AGL and max aviation AGL for that part of the runway area for helicopters was 200 feet. So I don't know, man. I don't know. Air traffic control should have also pointed out, like you said, where the bird was. And it's. I think the whole thing's going to have a lot of mess in it. All right, so I got another dipper here. We're going to jump on in it. So the new DOD, so Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth's now in charge. New sheriff in town. Things are happening. Y'all, things are happening like lightning fast. Like things are happening by the minute almost. One of which is, and I pulled this one from Fox. Nope, I take it back. I pulled this from The Independent. I pulled this from The Independent just this morning. Dateline today, Trump says he's going to send illegal migrants to Guantanamo Bay. Have you heard this?
I have.
Gitmo. And,
I've also heard him flirt with the idea of Alcatraz as well.
Alcatraz. You can't use Alcatraz. Mm-hmm. Alcatraz is a leaky derelict of a building that's only good for tours and, you know, gangster discussions.
I think he saw the reaction with the other one and decided to troll a little bit. Yes.
Yeah, I don't think we're going out to the Rock.
No.
that's still a very good movie.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. You're tired. You're tired, you say. That's what cowards say. That's my Sean Connery.
Yeah, that's good.
Welcome to the Rock. All right. That was pretty freaking good, by the way. I could hear myself in my headphones. That was good.
That was pretty good.
All right. So, yeah, independent reporting, and I saw him also say it last night in his presser, because Donald Trump is not afraid to talk to the press like every day. President Donald Trump on Wednesday signed an order directing his administration to revive a migrant detention facility at Guantanamo Bay Naval Station in Cuba to hold detained migrants while they await deportation. You know what's interesting is our new Secretary of Defense actually did a tour in Gitmo. He was assigned to a unit that was on security detail at Guantanamo Bay in the last 10 years, I believe. So he's intimately familiar with the facilities there. You've got Camp X-Ray. You've got, what's the other camp? There's two camps over there mainly. They've got up to 30,000 beds they can hold there. Now, I thought it was in the hundreds. I didn't realize it was that big. But then Pete Hegseth said last night on one of the shows I was watching, maybe in Jesse Waters, that this is where, when we had the Haitian immigrant crisis some years back, this is where they held them all. I think it was after the Haitian, the major earthquake that occurred in Haiti. But he said, we have 30,000 beds in Guantanamo. We can detain the worst criminal illegal aliens threatening the American people there. Some of them so bad, Trump said, we don't even trust the countries we would send them back to hold them there. We don't want them coming back. So we're going to send them to Guantanamo, and that'll double our capacity immediately. Were we on the air yesterday when I told you the story about in Baghdad about threatening the guy with Guantanamo?
I don't think we were on
the air.
We were off air.
So we did a raid on, it was actually a raid on a mosque. We had to in Baghdad in 2004. And I've got the administrator of the mosque sitting there trying to figure out why we found an RPG site in his personal quarters, and I'm getting nowhere with it. I'm asking him, what's this? Why do you have this? Why were rockets launched outside your gate? Why were these young men, you know, here in the mosque? Yada, 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 yada. Nada. I don't know. Finally, the op sergeant major comes up and goes, hey, sir, can I talk to him for a minute? Sure. And he looks at him and goes, do you like Cuba? He yelled at him. And the guy goes, Cuba? He knew exactly what was happening. He goes, Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, baby. You're going on an all-expense-paid vacation. And
I bet that straightened him up real quick.
Pretty sure he started talking. So I can neither confirm nor deny that he went to Cuba. But yeah, the new DOD right now got a new sheriff in town and things are happening. And they're going to make use of facilities in Guantanamo. I'm for it. They're also going to make use of the military on the southern border. They already are. They're also going to make use of military airlift capability to deport some of these criminals back to their home countries. They already are. So in literally 1 week time, Trump has engaged the U.S. military on issues related to defense of the homeland just like overnight. And you know what I'm hearing? It's working. So, you know, they got a mission. They got a mission set. Listen, we're going to take a break right now. When I come back from this break, though, we're going to jump on into what is Trump doing about DEI in the military? And what did Pete Hegseth say about it? And then what's happening with our NATO allies? Are they going to increase their defense spending? Maybe they already are. And then did you hear about Mark Milley? I'll tell you all about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man. Giving you all the truth you can slap on a bumper sticker. All right, so I'm in this section right now, this Dipper, I'm calling the new DOD. Because, y'all, it's like a whole new day. Ain't no way around it. It's a whole new day. So, first of all, I mentioned to you that immediately... Trump issued several orders that impacted the Department of Defense overall, not the least of which is the end of DEI, which I'll get to more in a minute. And then, ending transgenderism as being an accepted practice openly, flagrantly in the U.S. military. And then, oh, by the way, engaging the military in our immigration crisis, illegal immigration crisis. So we've got Military Airlift Command is working in the deportation process, flying bad guys home. We've got Guantanamo Bay is about to come online, and I guarantee it's going to be staffed up with a pretty serious cadre of military, probably a lot of which are going to come from the National Guard, and we'll have several thousand down there again, feeding, housing, detaining, and maintaining all these illegals that we're going to ship down to Gitmo. And then right now, you've got 1,600 more troops headed down to the U.S.-Mexico border. So I pulled this story off of military.com. Not known for being a conservative rag, but there it is. Military.com reports an initial wave of 1,600 troops deployed to the U.S.-Mexico border by Monday following a mobilization that started last week. So 1,600 headed out now. I think we got about 2,500 headed total. There's 2,500 National Guard and Reserve troops already on the border. We got elements of the 82nd Airborne Division's 3rd Brigade Combat Team. We got elements out of Fort Drum's 10th Mountain Division. And I'm looking at a list of all the units, holding it up here to the camera. It's a long list. But they're pulling a lot. I knew they would. They're pulling a lot of combat engineers, and they're pulling a lot of MPs or military police, because I would dare say what they're doing is they're probably not going to have arrest authority. I would imagine what they're going to do is relieve the Customs and Border Patrol of some of the minutiae of what it means to have all these bodies coming. And by the way, the number of bodies crossing the Rio Grande has gotten a lot lower, like exponentially lower, like hardly any by comparison to where we were. But you're going to have MPs handling detention and security issues. You're going to have combat engineers working to build the wall and provide construction on housing and that kind of stuff, and then you're going to have the ability of Customs and Border Patrol to do their job, actually interdict and detain. Y'all, it's a whole new day. And you know what? Let me just say this. Trump did this in 1 week. The Trump Vance administration has literally been in for 10 days. He's had it for a whole 10 days. He's been in for 10 days, and all of this has happened. Biden was in for 4 years and just kind of, the border is secure, says Mayorkas. And no, it was awful. But one of the things he also did was ended DEI in the military. Diversity, equity, and inclusion, the place where merit goes to die. And as a new commander-in-chief, he made it real clear. I pulled this piece off of Real Clear Defense. RealClearDefense.com points out that there's little doubt that he and Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth will order the military to fully comply. Pete Hegseth actually tweeted out on his own social media a handwritten note, I guess in his handwriting, saying that DEI will end now. All DEI offices will close. DEI contracts will be canceled. And anyone who tries to rename things or get around the system will be fired. About as blunt as you can get. Wall Street Journal, according to the Real Clear Defense, says the American people made clear they're tired of DEI's divisive ideology, and Mr. Trump's order rightfully notes that DEI can lead to illegal discrimination or preferential treatments. Now, here's where they're going to have a problem. He's going to have to also deal with not just the deep staters and the people that say, well, we got to keep doing this. We're not going to tell them. We're just going to rebrand it. Don't rebrand it. Don't. But what about the service academies? So I'm not a service academy grad myself. I'm an ROTC guy. I got my commission at University of South Alabama. But I mean, I have every bit of admiration for the service academies. I got no beef there. But right now what we're looking at is there was a Supreme Court case that came out in 2023. It was called Students for Fair Admissions versus the Fellows of Harvard College. And what the students case basically did was ended affirmative action and the recruiting and retention of people based on demographics for colleges. And yet somehow or another, our nation's military service academies were exempt because they fall under the DOD, I believe. Well, I think we're going to see that end. I mean, right now, you got the U.S. Naval Academy using race-based admission policies. Right now. In 2024 or 2025, setting up race-based admissions policies. Well, we're looking at right now, and here's a copy of the executive order from Harry Truman back in the day that said, it is hereby declared to be the policy of the president there shall be equality of treatment, not equity, equality of treatment and opportunity for all persons in the armed forces without regard to race, color, or national origin. And so basically what we're saying is Trump's just returning things back to the way they're supposed to be. And it's amazing. It's all happening just like in 10 days. Now, I'll tell you a few other things that have been happening in just 10 days. You've got some people that are finally being held accountable. You got watchdogs finding things in the Pentagon's reports. And then you got NATO upping their game when it comes to spending on their own defense. Do I feel like we need to drop out of NATO? No, I do not. I think America's interests are best served by being a leader in NATO still. Should we be the sole provider of security in the region? Absolutely not. Trump is already making it. The Trump effect is in full gear, y'all. Full gear. And I'll tell you about it when we get back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the southeast U.S. of A. Y'all, I'm talking about from Huntsville back over to Chattanooga, from Tuscaloosa back over to Gadsden. Y'all, I'm talking about big old patches of Georgia and Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. Oh, man. All right. So, listen, I'm in. It's kind of been a two-dipper day, but it feels like we covered a lot of ground. I'm almost positive we can call the Cash Patel discussion a mini dipper.
Yeah, similar to yesterday's of what did we do yesterday? One dipper technically, but a bunch of mini dippers.
Yeah.
I'd say two dippers a day with a bunch of mini dippers.
Counts for John from Huntsville, who's new in our grades right now. I hope that counts.
But hey, that's improvement. We got two in today. We got one in yesterday, so there you go.
Absolutely. Mark from Red Bay, by the way, just checked in and says, Phil, you got the Sean Connery and the Mitch McConnell impersonations going on. Good job. Thank you, man. Appreciate it. By the way, he also says, I remember the days back when DEI meant Dale Earnhardt Incorporated. Funny how things change. Yeah. That's a whole level of DEI we don't have now, isn't it? Cousin Crystal checking in from Moulton. Cousin Crystal says, Phil, could you give a big shout to my friend Jackie? She's been a loyal listener, and we always have our Right Side Talk at work. Jackie, thank you. And can I have some applause for Jackie right now? Just go ahead and thank you. Thank you very much. Jackie, you are a Right Side ruffian. If you hang with Crystal, you're absolutely an OG ruffian. All right, listen, Gary from Decatur. Says he was stationed in Cuba back in 91 through 93 during the refugee crisis. He says, not my best tour. And he's got a picture. Yep, there is. He's got his Gitmo hat right there on the shelf. Man, thank you for your service. We appreciate you, as always.
By the way, have you seen the accusations that this is Trump sending illegal immigrants to a concentration camp? I've seen tons of those.
Concentration camp.
Yeah.
They probably said that about, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed too.
And I'm just gonna say I don't think that Trump is going to be sending the, I think he's going to be saying the worst of the worst to Guantanamo Bay, at the very least, you know? And which, by the way, it's even if he didn't, like, if you're an illegal immigrant, you're committing a crime.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think they're trying to paint the image of these, you know, crying kids being sent off to Guantanamo Bay. I don't think that's...
Here's what is going to happen. They're going to get down there, and they're going to have a sunny opportunity to, you know, get tan and refreshed and have 3 square meals a day. And, yeah.
I just... I'm of the belief the scum who are in the... You know, they're the ones that are going to be priorities to go to there, not the... I didn't know. I did, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the dreamers aren't going to be there. Mm-mm. No, not the dreamers. No. The dreamers. No, it's going to be Camp Tren de Aragua.
Yes, and if anybody opposes that, then you got something wrong with you.
I completely agree. I'm for. And by the way, I think what a great use of facilities. We have the facilities. Why should we build a new one here? So let's say you start doing a roundup in Chicago, and then you're okay. Do we build a camp in Texas and fly them to Texas, or do we just go ahead and reactivate an existing camp in Cuba and fly one extra hour to Cuba to a place that we control already? I mean, we're going to build it and staff it somewhere. You got to detain them somewhere. Do we start paying for big, huge contracting prices for local prisons to hold them? I don't think so. I love the Guantanamo Bay idea. And by the way, it's got airstrips and everything. Everything there to sustain is there.
So utilization of resources is what it is.
That's exactly what it is. By the way, the new DOD, one of the things that's happening is, yes, we're a member of NATO. No, I don't think we should pull out of NATO. But I do think that NATO needs to step up and do more to provide for its own regional defense. Should we be there as an ally? Absolutely. Do we have a vested national interest? Absolutely. Poland is now spending 4% of its GDP, and Lithuania and Estonia just increased their defense spending to 5% of their GDP, all because Trump asked for it. Listen, it's a whole new day. Now, Lithuania and Estonia are not going to be the two countries that, you know, stop the red hordes. They're not. Poland actually is a pretty stout military. But Trump last week at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, I still love the fact that he spoke to the elitists at Davos. He urged NATO countries to ramp up their defense spending. This is his quote. He said, "I'm going to ask all NATO nations to increase their defense spending to 5% of GDP, which is what it should have been years ago." He said, "It was only at 2%, and most nations didn't even pay that till I came along. I insisted they pay, and they did. The United States was really paying the difference at that time, and it was unfair to the United States." And so thank you, President Trump, for that one. All right. I see where Mike from Huntsville just checked in and says, "I thought you were going to talk about Millie." I am. Brace yourself.
You just wait.
It's right here in my hot little hands. I pulled this one off of townhall.com. So, yeah, General Mark Milley. I have said it before and I'll say it again. When I, you know, with my background being what it is, when I first saw Milley coming in, he went from being chief of staff of the Army to the position of being chairman of the Joint Chiefs. I had no beef with him until he became chairman, and then I began to wonder, what's this guy's deal? I mean, you're looking at, and I've said it before, you're looking at a guy who's got every marker of having been a warrior. Special Forces, Ranger qualified, Jumpmaster wings, combat diver badge, multiple decorations in combat, foreign jump wings, all of it. I mean, he's got all the Scare Me badges, right? But then something changed, or maybe it didn't. Maybe it was always there. All I know is Milley became somewhat of a pariah. First of all, Milley didn't like Trump. I don't know. Maybe he didn't like a strong personality. Maybe he wanted someone who he could say, "This is how it's going to be, sir," and the sir would just do it. Not with Trump. Milley didn't seem to cotton to Trump's leadership style. Oh, Milley began to backtalk Trump's leadership style. Don't I have an audio clip of Milley speaking, by the way? Do I have that? What's that audio clip that I've got? No, I don't have that. I had that on a previous day that we didn't get to.
Mm-hmm.
But Milley did a complete interview in 2023, and literally talked down about the commander in chief. And then it also came out that while Trump was still in office, that Milley made a call to his Chinese counterpart to assure them that should Trump do anything crazy, don't worry, we got this covered. What does that even mean? And why was that his role? Now, do they talk to each other? They should. Counterparts talk to each other internationally, even those that are not our, but you don't undermine the leadership of the office of the President of the United States. You don't. It's like that scene from Band of Brothers. You salute the rank, not the man. You salute the office. I don't care if you like the man. Well, Milley couldn't apparently hang on to that. And then he got into the woke stuff. Then he began to believe that, you know, DEI was the way to go. And oh, by the way, maybe we have some privilege in our ranks and we need to consider, you know, whether or not there's a need for, you know, people to read certain books by like Ibram X. Kendi. And then came the debacle of a pullout in Afghanistan. God almighty. As a veteran of the war in Afghanistan, it hurt my heart to watch this. And to think that the guys that I knew who went down range and shed, you know, blood and tears on that ground, watched it all be squandered. And I'm not saying I wanted the war to continue. 20 years is a long freaking time. I was there in the very beginning riding horses. I mean, I get it. But the reality is it had to end sometime, but how you leave the war is just as important as how you get into it. And the Biden administration had no clue about leadership. And we do hear that there was advice given to Biden by his military, presumably General Milley, that said we ought to at least keep Bagram open. But what we know right now is that when it was all over and done and 13 service members died at the Abbey Gate and we had people falling off of airplanes and we had no more forward presence in a country that the Taliban took over the day after we left, and we left behind billions of dollars in military equipment. And oh, by the way, we abandoned 1,000 members of green card holders and American citizens in Afghanistan. When all that was done, you'd think that somebody with Milley's background would have said, I accept full responsibility. And we've never heard him say that. We've never heard him say, I tried to tender my resignation and they wouldn't take it. Never once. Now, did he try to resign? Yeah, but under Trump. He decided to stay under Biden. What does that tell you? Well, the level of angst with Milley goes kind of beyond just he worked for the wrong president, because there's always been SecDefs and chairmen and others who worked for the wrong president. There always will be. I still don't like, you know, Wes Clark. I think Wes Clark was you know, a great general with bad ideas. He worked for Clinton. He was a big Clinton fan. But I never wanted to see him, like, dethroned, so to speak. But Milley needs to be held accountable. And this is going to send shockwaves. So the first thing that happened within an hour of Trump being sworn in, General Milley's portrait was taken down in the Pentagon. I've been upstairs during my tenure in the Pentagon. I had an opportunity to be, I'm not trying to portray myself as being like in the know, but I was actually upstairs in the Joint Chiefs hallway, and it's impressive. And his portrait is no longer there. It is gone. So General Milley's portrait is taken down. Oh, by the way, it turns out there's a second portrait of General Milley in the Pentagon in the Army's Marshall Corridor, which is where, from back in his time when he was Chief of Staff of the Army, that's also being taken down. Story on Town Hall also points out that General Milley just had his security clearance stripped, and that Secretary Hegseth has asked for there to be a review by the Inspector General to determine whether or not he should be stripped of one of his stars. He's a 4-star in retirement. Well, first of all, that's a whole lot of ignominy, if you know what I'm saying. But what does the security clearance mean? Why does he need it? He's retired. Oh, no, no. Listen, those guys retire and they still come back as graybeard advisors very often. They still get called upon to go to the Situation Room or do other things with the National Security Council. And, oh, by the way, they tend to make a lot of money in retirement because of the things they've seen and know. And they already have a security clearance working in the defense industry. And without that clearance, and by the way, think about his position. He had the highest level of clearance you could possibly have. Now he doesn't. Now he's got the same, you know, same level of clearance as Joe Snuffy, the ragbag private who just walked in off the street. Nada. He will not be working for the big dogs under clearance level activity. And if he does, those big dogs can lose their clearance contracts.
I think so. One of my favorite Milley stories, I mean, favorite because it's funny, not because it's a good story, but of you know, have you seen the clip of Trump talking to people at Mar-a-Lago about Milley? And he's like, apparently Milley told him it would be cheaper to leave all the equipment in Afghanistan than to bring it back. And he goes, at that time, that's when I knew he was an idiot. You know, it's like, it's funny though, because it's like, oh, all of a sudden the government's interested in saving money when it's in terms of leaving equipment with the enemy and not taking it back. It's just that sums up his incompetence and stupidity, truly.
There will always be materiel left behind in a war zone. I mean, it just happens. But you don't leave it in mass, crated up, fueled up, mm-hmm. ready to be used. At the very least, you blow it in place. I mean, we used to roll with a thermite grenade in so that we could destroy our comms and all that kind of stuff if we had to at the very last second. You didn't leave it for the enemy to use.
And the reasoning being, sir, it would be cheaper. It's like, really? Like
cheaper.
Yeah.
Well, how cheap is it when you have to fight against your own materiel later on?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, listen, I got to take a break. Last break of the day here on the Friday Eve. My gosh, it's been a full show. I didn't even get to everything. I mean, I've got stuff here about watchdogs at the VA, and I've got stuff about, you know, other stuff that's happening with regards to DEI and the Pentagon. I don't know, man. How can we possibly cover all the newness in the DOD? Well, all I know is I hope it transcends the military into what we knew under Reagan. Wouldn't that be something? Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. Well, I know that Jeff from Indiana, his sweet wife, had a procedure done this morning, so we're praying that she is well. And Jeff Rowe, we look forward to you calling back in and giving us an update. But that's just part of the Right Side family here. Jeff from Indiana is one of our regular folks. Text line, I got a few of them to catch up on here. So Bruce from Springville checking in. He says Gitmo is the next best thing to Alcatraz. Even if they make it over the border fence from the Marines, the Cubans will shoot them. That's probably true. Graham from Meridianville says, I was on Milley's special staff when he was commander of the 10th Mountain Division. He was known to be a progressive liberal, and that was in 2011 and 12. Wow, Graham. How about that? Well, first of all, thank you for your service. And you know what? I don't want to say it's refreshing to hear that. I'd love to think there wasn't a moment when the switch flipped. If he was always somewhat progressive and liberal, then that would fit. It's just one of those things where I'm always surprised when I find somebody who looks like he's from the warrior class, but he's progressive liberal. I don't get it. It doesn't seem to match. But anyway, Graham, thanks for your service. Thanks for the insight. Text us more if you want to. I'd love to hear more. Scott from Somerville said, Milley made a very basic mistake. He thought himself better than his boss. The president is the commander-in-chief. Oldest rule in the military, no matter what you think of the man, you salute the rank. Scott? Perfectly said. Thank you very much. Steve from Huntsville says, I was in the Army and we were given phosphorus grenades in case we had to abandon equipment. Yeah, see, that's right. I mean, there you go. We had thermites or Willy Peach. You could put them in there too. But the reality is you didn't leave stuff for the enemy to make use of. And yet we did. I mean, it just, the whole thing made no sense. And I understand that some things couldn't get out, but there was zero reason. Listen, here's the bottom line. They could have easily said, we're going to begin pulling back, and they could have brought in all the equipment to Bagram and created a massive motor pool out of it, but then denied the use of it to the enemy, and then maintained Bagram as a forward present station, because right now we have nothing but over-the-horizon capability in Afghanistan. We've lost all of our HUMINT on the ground, and we could have been there just like we stayed in Japan after World War II, just like we stayed in Germany after World War II, just like we're still in South Korea now. Why do we do that? Why? Forward presence. It gives us an opportunity for staging and for the ability to gather intelligence. It just makes sense. All right, that's enough of that. I can rehash that all day long. The grades are in. John from Huntsville. Butters and JP both get a spectacular A++. Today's winners are obviously Phil and Lee from Huntsville with a gigantic Gulf of America-sized A++. Congratulations. Appreciate you, John. Thanks so much. All right, listen, you guys are an amazing audience, and we have had some more kind of a day. What's the final count, brother? How many people were streaming with us today?
So total, 27,428.
What?
Right Side Media's Twitter, that's 26,719.
What? You got to hit some applause or something on that. You can't just say that and let it be. There you go. There you go. You should have gotten extra points for that sound effect.
I know.
Yeah, thank you to all of you who jumped in. We're making great use of our platforms. More to come in the future. We just got some word that I think I'll be making some announcements here very soon about additional expanded opportunities. But all of our stuff's at rightsidemedia.org.
By the way, we're going to make an effort more to stream more events like today. Like
I think
Cash Patel hearings, RFK as well. Unfortunately, Tulsi's was during the same time as Cash's, so we kind of had to choose one. But in the future, we want to start doing that more.
But tomorrow, I'll tell you what, if there's not one that's live, then tomorrow, if there's a way for you to restream Tulsi's, you know, and make it a streaming event for us, for our folks to see, apparently people want to see it.
Yeah.
Let's not get it. I'm not saying that. I'm saying it facetiously. Apparently they want to see it. Well, of course they do.
Mm-hmm.
More to come on all of that. All right, listen, I say it all the time, but I absolutely mean it. You guys are the best audience in the world, and I'm proud to sit here every day with JP and have a chance to go through the issues with you. But don't you ever forget, there are more of us than there are of them. God is still on his throne. Stay in the fight. We'll see you tomorrow.